Clan members agree to display the treasured Whale House carvings, and a Tongass timber sale is announced. It's a KHNS Local News. I'm Marga Friednauer. Those stories and more up next. After decades of disagreement, the Gonak Tedi clan of Klukwan has agreed to allow treasured carvings of their Whale House clan to be publicly displayed at a future cultural center in the village. The carvings have been the center of controversy in the village and beyond for nearly a century. The pieces are twice that old and are valued among the clan for their cultural and spiritual significance. They are also revered in the art world as some of the premier examples of Northwest Coast Native art. Eldona Jonitis is the interim director of the University of Alaska Museum of the North in Fairbanks.
The Whale House carvings and paintings rank among some of the most extraordinary works of world art, not just Native art, and they're total masterpieces. And it is extraordinary that the clan is now willing to let other people see these magnificent works of art.
The carved pieces include house posts, a wall screen, and a feast dish. They've estimated to have been carved in the early 1800s by a carver from near Wrangell. The same man carved the interior house post for the chief sheikh's house there. Word of his skill traveled, and a prominent leader from Klukwan sent for the carver when he was planning to build a large house for his clan, the Gonak Tedi. The chief decided to create the house under the whale crest. The carvings gained recognition from outsiders more than 100 years ago. Collectors and art dealers longed after them, and serious money was offered to the caregivers or other clan members over the years to purchase the carvings. About 1900, the Chicago Field Museum even sent a buyer to Klukwan to make an offer on them, and some small objects were sold and left the village over the years from the Whale House and other clan houses. But it was disputed over the years whether the pieces belonged to individuals or an entire clan. Seattle art dealer Michael Johnson pursued the purchase of the items for nearly two decades. Efforts by him to buy the items from clan members were thwarted in the mid-70s when villagers blocked the road with trees to keep Johnson out. But in 1984, members of one family who claimed ownership of the items were successful in removing some of them to sell to Johnson. The clan members said they were working at the direction of family elders who said the pieces were rotting away in the village. They wanted the pieces sold so they could be preserved and shown in museums. But other clan members of the Whale House sued and halted the sale of the items. A judge ordered the items be stored in a Seattle warehouse. A U.S. district court judge then ordered the matter be settled at a tribal court. The tribal court judge eventually ruled the carvings belonged to the clan and they should be returned. The items arrived back in Klukwan in 1994 and have not been seen publicly since. It's not known by outsiders if the items are now in the clan house in Klukwan or being kept elsewhere for safekeeping. Current Hitsati, or caretaker of the items, Jones Hotch Jr., won't say. He also won't go into detail about the meeting on June 2nd among 40 Gonak Tedi clan members who traveled from across the country to attend. But he says there was good discussion that brought about agreement to place the items in the planned Jilkat Kwan Heritage Center in the village. It's a move Hotch himself supports.
I feel like this was the best place for them to be, for them, so they can last the longest.
Those in the clan who opposed the sale of the items in years past haven't always agreed the items should be on public display. When asked if the ancestors would approve of the decision, Hotch reflected that new ideas and changes come with each generation.
But I think every generation something in our culture might kind of change. You know, like people say they never used chainsaws when they were carving. And things like that. Carving totem poles, canoes, whatever. But some people say, yeah, but if they were around when they were there, they probably would have.
The Heritage Center is still a year or more from completion, but with the promise of some of the most renowned and treasured Northwest Coast art being housed there, more funds and support for the center may come about. And many in the art world and general public will be anxiously awaiting the opening of the center. Jonitis said the pieces will provide an unprecedented insight and education on Tlingit culture.
So the point is that now that the clan is willing to share hopefully the stories, certainly the objects, their history. That is such a gift to humanity on the part of the clan.
And Jonitas said she will be traveling to Klekwan when they go on public display. Southeast Regional Native Corporation is out of the plastics business. Sea Alaska sold its share of factories in Alabama, Iowa, and Guadalajara, Mexico on Monday. Nipro Incorporated bought out Sea Alaska's share of its Nipro-Canuck partnership. The purchase price was not revealed. President and CEO Chris McNeil Jr. says it's part of a larger effort to narrow investments.
This particular operations has had a spotty performance over the years, but now all three operations have been profitable. When you have a company that has increasing profitability, that's generally a time to sell if you have the opportunity to sell.
Nipro was recently purchased by Jabil, a huge multinational corporation with 60 plants in 33 countries. McNeil says that was also a factor in the sale. He says a few tribal members interned at Nipro, but the factories were too far away to benefit most shareholders. Sea Alaska's board and management are considering new areas of investment in Alaska and the Pacific Northwest, where most of its 22,000 shareholders live.
We're also looking for something that is more constant with our native values, including the concept of sustainability.
Sea Alaska sold its global logistics subsidiary earlier this year, giving the same reasons. Tongass National Forest Supervisor Forrest Cole announced the record of decision for the Big Thorn timber sale during a teleconference Monday afternoon. The ROD calls for a harvest of nearly 150 million board feet, coming from more than 6,000 acres of old growth and more than 2,000 of acres of second growth forest on Prince of Wales Island. Some welcome what they say is a needed supply of timber to keep local mills operating, but a regional conservation group criticizes the plan, which it predicts will harm habitat for wildlife. KRBD's Lila Carey has more.
150 million board feet is a big timber sale. As Forest Supervisor Forrest Cole points out, that's potentially good news for loggers and mill operators like Viking Lumber outside of Klawak.
The Viking mill harvests about 23 million a year, so this could be, if they were successful bidders on the project, this could be a substantial, you know, boost to their supply.
But the size of the sale is not good news for conservationists who are worried about wildlife habitat. Bob Kloss is with the Southeast Alaska Conservation Council.
This is a huge sale. It's double the size of the last biggest sale since the pulp mill era, and it's just a continuation of the too much logging, too fast policies of timber management on the Tongass.
The harvest area includes timber stands near Kaufman Cove and Thorn Bay. It allows construction of 46 miles of road, which includes reconstruction of about 36 miles. According to the Forest Service, none of that harvest would take place in inventoried roadless areas. Cole says the sale could provide up to a decade's worth of timber for mid-size mills like Viking and sets aside acreage for smaller operations.
And in this project, we have put up about 842 acres for small sales, and that equates to about somewhere in the neighborhood of 20 million feet, which is a huge supply for them.
He says that when making the decision, he considered public comments and other factors such as wildlife and economic needs. He estimates that the project could generate nearly 700 jobs. The selected alternative was modified to mitigate some wildlife habitat concerns by reducing some of the old growth and winter harvest, and it keeps the roads open following the harvest for up to 5 years rather than closing them immediately. POW residents have expressed frustration over the closure of old logging roads, which provide easier access for hunting. Cole adds that the sale will give everyone time to figure out how to make a second growth timber economy work.
By providing a stable supply of timber to the industry now, they're giving the Forest Service and the industry the breathing space needed for a transition to young growth timber in the future.
But the large amount of old growth included in this ROD is of particular concern to Kloss and SEAC.
For us, you know, the habitat is almost synonymous with the old growth forest and the remaining reserves inside the Big Thorn project area are the places where we need to keep for deer habitat in particular.
The ROD announcement marks the start of the appeal process. Klaus says it's too early to say whether his organization will appeal the decision.
With the scale of this timber offering, I would think that we will be looking very carefully at it. At least we'll be trying to clarify some details, but I don't know exactly what process we'll be using.
Cole says he's confident there will be appeals. They could delay the process, especially if those appeals aren't resolved and lead to lawsuits. However, if all goes smoothly,
we hope to advertise this project around the middle of August and have a bid opening the middle of September. And if we can achieve those two objectives, then we could potentially award this project by the end of September.
In that case, logging could commence as early as this year. In Ketchikan, I'm Layla Carey.
For KHNS News, I'm Margaret Friednauer. Special thanks to Layla Carey for help with this report. Thanks for joining us for your local news on KHNS. We appreciate your support.